Welcome to another episode of Inside Line. This time around, we're going to talk to a man who has prepared literally hundreds of Suzuki race bikes. We're not going to talk about GSXRs or Hayabusas. Instead, we're going to talk to him about the humble yet arguably iconic SV650. We're going to talk to James Holland, the owner of one of the UK's leading SV experts, JHS. James, what's the story? Where did you and the SV begin your relationship?
Back in 1999, I suppose, when the SV was launched within the UK market. It was a new model bike. It was a new iconic bike, unbeknown to us then, at that particular time. It was fresh and it drew a lot of attention.
But what was it that seemed so appealing about what, on the face of it, was just a very ordinary sort of everyday bike?
Just that, the everyday ordinary bike, which was affordable, whereas the other manufacturers of V-twins were not affordable for a lot of working people.
I mean, did you think racing potential straight away rather than anything you might do for a road rider?
Yes, I think so. If I look back, it was always something that was in the back of the mind. But there wasn't a class for it at that particular point in time. There wasn't the classes as there are now that you can run in. But I knew if this bike was going to sell, there was certainly going to be some movement in racing to accommodate it.
So, I mean, did the mind start buzzing away as soon as you saw the first image of the bike then?
Yes.
So, I mean, did you have plans for it even before it went on sale to the public?
The very first picture I ever seen of it.
Right, go on, tell me then, what sort of things were you planning in your head at least?
Your instant plans, you start to exhaust pipes, but you're stigmatised a little bit with what else is on the marketplace. So you keep being drawn back to that machine and look at that, but you've got to come up with new ideas, not to keep looking at that. Come up with new ideas. We've got a new model bike here. It's completely revolutionary for the time. This dates back to, you know, the internet was only just starting. We haven't got the internet like we've got now in mobile phones. And so you couldn't just click a few clicks and away to go. You had to look at stuff and dig it out. And this particular bike, the first thing we tried to do is get hold of a bike.
Oh, before it went into the sales rooms?
Well, you just couldn't get hold of them. But you had a whole marketplace of grey imported stuff that was coming through as well. So that opened up.
So were you clamouring to get hold of one of these?
Yes.
To work on it straight away?
Yeah.
I mean, as time passed then, what sort of more things were you thinking about that you could...
Well, you're trying to get spares then. You want to get a spare engine.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a bike, great, lovely, but we don't want to destroy an engine in the concept of trying to get more performance from it. You want a spare engine.
So go on then. Are you already thinking of cams, pistons, gas flowing, as well as an exhaust or some mods to the intake?
Yeah, the first protocol was, which is probably what I'm known for, is a big bore kit.
Yeah.
We took the engine and we decided that actually this bike would work really well as a 750.
Okay, how do you do that then? Do you take it apart and just, do you visualise its potential almost straight away? Or do you take it apart and scratch your chin and...
Well, you take it apart and, as you say, scratch your chin, you look at it and look at what you can do with it to get it to that point, to get it to 750cc as close as you possibly can. But bear in mind, there's nothing out on the marketplace for it. There's no one doing anything, be it in the UK or in the US, because this is such a new model bike. Generally, most stuff takes 12 months to hit marketplace. But this was such an iconic bike when it hit the marketplace.
So did you get quite excited then as soon as you saw the bike then?
Yeah, and I still do.
Right, okay.
I still do. I still get excited now like I did the first day I ever seen one.
Why did you get excited? Did the engine and the rest of the bike lend itself, do you think, to modification and
performance? It had a lovely 90-degree V-twin, double-over cam engine. It had a proper shock absorber in it.
Yeah.
Nothing against the TL range of machines, but it had a bit of history there. And, you know, it was a good engine in the TL, but the SV just took it a stage further. And it was very cheap. $399 would buy you a new one.
Yeah, yeah. Less than $4,000.
Less than $4,000.
When did you finally get your hands on one then? Did before you could buy them in UK dealers?
No, I managed to get one in March.
Yeah.
And then I bought another one in April.
So, I mean, you were attacking this project quite seriously then, weren't you? You weren't messing about. When you started taking it apart, did you look at things like the ports in the head and size of valves, etc.?
Yeah, we looked at simple things first. Looked at cam profiles.
Yep.
Looked at bore size, how much meat was left in the barrels. Could we bore it out bigger? But also, you have to bear in mind, is 20 plus years ago, tuning work is slightly different than how it is now in availability of stuff. You couldn't click on the internet and find a piston designer. So you had to take a piston, you had to cross reference. I remember the first pistons that I came up with were out of like a quad bike and out of the route.
Well, were you simply looking for the right bore size
gudgeon pin and something that's close? Forget all the valves, you know, I can machine all that back into it. So we managed to do something there.
I mean, this is a very time consuming business, isn't it? All this sort of research and early sort of development. When did you manage to get your first running sort of significantly modified engine?
I think it was around about the June.
Right, okay.
We were up and running with an engine.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, it was just like a makeshift, let's get this rolling and see what it does. Yep. Engine. You know, there weren't jet kits available, there wasn't exhaust systems available. And then slowly as the marketplace opens up, the US then has got their bikes and it's starting to roll in. You're getting, you know, very limited supply of basic exhaust systems. You're getting a Dynojet kit, you know, and you start rolling from there and you start learning, but you quickly run out of expandable items. So you have to start designing stuff and making stuff.
Where did you first race the SV then, James?
It was known as Evel Kievel.
All right, okay, yeah. A track no longer used for quite some time,
quite some time, and Killearn, because they're very local circuits.
Yeah. Neither used any longer, though.
No longer. An Evel Kievel because it was quite an evil track.
Okay. Was yours the only SV on track?
I believe so. There was nothing else there at the circuit.
Yep.
But it wasn't, in our perspective, being developed as a track bike. It was just something of interest that we could take it on track and do something with it.
I mean, what was the reaction? Did anyone snigger and sort of go, what on earth are you doing
exactly
with this thing?
Exactly that. What are you doing racing against thousands of CC
bikes? Did that fire your desire to make it
it certainly does. It you know, puts the jack up in a way to go. I'll bring this to you then. And that's really the ground of it all extended to where we are today. But yet those, you know, early rounds, it wasn't expected to do well against 1,000cc bikes. You know, it was going to get slaughtered in a straight line. These bikes were well developed and they were proper race bikes.
So did you just need a class then to make it competitive?
That's what we needed, fundamentally.
Yeah.
We needed a class.
When did that come along then? When did you get the chance to produce a fully competitive bike?
That came along sort of 2002, 2003 with the advent of the Mini Twins class coming through.
Up to that point though, had you done more and more work?
We'd done more and more development work.
Yep.
We'd realised that actually trying to go head to head with the bigger bikes on a smaller bike at that particular point in time, because funds were limited, it's a non-starter. Stick to the road market. You get your products out there that you can sell to your customers who want to fit it onto their road bikes.
Was it the sort of first thing you thought about in the morning and the last thing at night sort of thing? Were you fully consumed in making an SV?
Yes.
Faster, better,
stronger. You go to bed thinking about it. You wake up thinking about it. You know, you're doodling about it.
When was the last bike that you put any sort of serious effort in to match that level of sort of interest?
Previous to that would have been older stuff.
Right.
It would have been a lot older stuff.
I mean, I think I asked before, you know, did this really get you excited? And so was this your raison d'etre?
Yeah, and it still is. The bike hasn't taken anything that away. You know, we still look at it and go, well, we can do this. As soon as the latest generation, the X, come out, bang, we were straight onto it.
Right, let's Let's fast forward today, but mention the key things that have occurred along the way. Now, you've had a lot of race success, haven't you? Manx winners in 2011.
Previous to the known as Super Twins, it was known as like the lightweight class, which was the Twins class. And that was with Dave Moffat.
Yep.
And then we took Dave then as part of a package. We took him then to the TT the following year, which was the very first year of the Twins on the roads. Didn't have a bad year.
What sort of lap time? Best lap time?
I think Dave was doing something like 110s, something yep. like that.
Did he like it?
Yeah. You know, he knew the bike.
Yeah.
But we knew we were on the back foot because yep. we didn't have the finances in place.
Sure. You know, what were the virtues of it at this stage, the SV? I mean, I presume it was very reliable.
It was reliable. And we had lots of spares because we'd been doing it by then a number of years. And we knew the bike inside out, so we could carry out any repairs very quickly. And fundamentally, we were excited about it. It was a whole new project. To take this to the TT, which is the pinnacle of road racing, is quite an exciting prospect.
Talk to me about some of the other notable sort of peaks of achievement and success after that.
Well, after that, we did some further road work with the TT and we went to the Northwest, not necessarily producing the best of results, but it's about putting it out there. And as I say, financially wise, we're self-financing this. So as a small business and me putting in my own finances, you know, dwindles quite quickly,
as you know. Famous bottomless pit.
Yes, yes. You can turn a fortune into a small one. Just go motorcycle racing.
What sort of spec was the bike in when Dave rode it at the TT? Had you got sort of cams by then? Had you gas flow?
We were doing a lot by then. Yeah. We'd already made camshafts. We had rods made. We were doing airboxes, radiators. But the jump from 1999 to 2012 was phenomenal.
What sort of horsepower did Dave
make? Oh, it was 90 horsepower.
Right. Again, though, running reliably, because, I mean, the TT
we did the TT
for a hell of a long time.
A hell of a long time. But we went into it with eyes wide open. We'd never done it. We'd done the Manx, and we were pleased with that. But that bike was never as highly strung or how we wanted it. And so we went to the TT with a whole new bike, which ironically, I still own now. I've still got that bike.
What sort of things are you needing to do to make 90 horsepower reliable? You mentioned a big radiator to keep it cool.
Yeah, we were putting radiators on them because just trying to change the dynamics of the bike a little bit, make it a bit easier to work on. We want a thinner radiator because we were putting different yokes and different forks into it. Yeah. We put an oil cooler in it of a bigger capacity, use a GSXR oil cooler on it to try and get more capacity in it as the bike's flat out. But you put forged pistons into it, you put valves, valve springs, camshafts. And at the TT, when we were there practice week, we found a whole host of problems that we'd never had before. Valve springs breaking.
Yep.
It sustained high RPM. Yep. You know, we'd never had that because we'd never been in that situation before. And you can't practice for the TT anywhere other than the TT. So you've got to be on hand to repair it and sort it and make it good.
Would you say the TT is the biggest reliability test of all?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, if it could survive the TT, can it do anything?
Yeah, I think it'll do anything. You know, you've got an awful long time, especially on a 650, where the little bike is on the stop. He's sitting at 10,000 RPM.
What's the red line for a standard one?
10.5.
Ooh, right.
He's sitting at 10,000 RPM and he's just buzzing away for miles.
By that time, how many other SVs were on the grid? Was it the bike
Not very many.
Okay.
It wasn't a massive grid
for
the TT that year. There was a lot of talk. There was a lot of money flying around from other manufacturers being put into other teams. And subsequently, you know, I think we did well.
Yeah.
We came out of it with a top 10 finish.
Yeah. Did that match expectations?
Yeah.
Did you drive home happy?
I was happy to finish. You know, that was the first thing. You know, and you can build from that.
Yeah.
If you don't finish, you got problems you then got to address. We finished.
Right. Bringing things right up to date, James. This is a bike that you've raced this season. Looks a bit trick. What's in this one?
basically everything we can throw at it this particular year.
Give me a list. How much horsepower?
100 plus horsepower.
Right.
Around about 105 at the wheel on our dyno. So a stock bike makes 70 horsepower on our dyno. So we're putting 35 horsepower on this.
Well, you're half a gain.
Yes. And that is bringing with it its own
challenges.
Challenges that will go with it. But accordingly, you know, we try and overcome those as much as possible. But chassis-wise, forks are changed, wheels are changed, brakes are changed, yokes are changed. You know, we've got obviously bodywork changed, plus all the engine work that has to go in with the exhaust system and the braking system to make it all come together and all work.
If I wanted you to build me one of these, how much money would I have to give you?
I think at this specification, I haven't got it written down because I daren't write it down. You're probably looking in the region of £40,000 to £45,000 to build this level of bike.
Is this your best SV650 then?
Not in this overall condition, because this is done the end of the year.
Okay, in terms of spec though, this is the best.
This is good. We can build a bike with any fork in it. It doesn't have to be a J6R fork. It can be an Olin's fork. It can be, you know, KTEC. You can build whatever you want into it. That's the individual requirement of the customer.
So can you spend a lot more than
you can spend more money? You can.
Right.
Yeah, I think we built two identical bikes for a well-known F1 driver a few years ago, and that cost doubled.
Why did he want them?
Just for track pleasure.
Can you name him?
Lance Stroll.
Right. Yeah, good on Lance, right. Now, this is a super twin, isn't it?
That's a full-on super twin, that is.
Okay, now, there's another class, isn't there, for the people who aren't quite as wealthy as the Lance Strolls of this world, called the mini twins class.
Mini twins class.
Tell me about that. Well, big difference, obviously.
Well, the big difference, cost and spec, as we are. But the fundamental, the bike starts as the same bike.
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to do an SV, we're going to do an SV. But your rules and regulations for a mini twins bike are very much dictated by what's laid out. You couldn't, up until the adaptation and now for next year's rules, have any external adjustments on the front fork, so they had to look standard.
Yep.
You could put a rear shock absorber in it. Yep. If the subframe was a bolt-on subframe, you could change the subframe, so you could put a lighter subframe on it. If it's part of the frame construction, you can't really do anything with it.
What about engine mods? Are they strictly
controlled? No, the engine has to be standard as homologated from the manufacturer. But you can update older models with newer model parts. So you could take camshafts for a new model SV650 and fit them into an older model SV650.
How rideable are they when you start to add a lot more power? Do they still have that, you know, flexibility and ease of use?
Yeah, they are.
It doesn't lose its character.
You can make it lose its character. You can make the engine peak it, but that's no good to anybody. That defeats the whole object of the V-twin configuration. You know, the idea of a V-twin configuration is have a good torquey motor that doesn't rev high, but pulls hard. And it certainly doesn't. And in mini twins form, you will see from looking at the grids that are around the country or various different clubs, they're pretty much full. There's a big following for it. You can pick up a mini twin now, a second-hand mini twin, for not a lot of money.
Have you learned pretty much all there is to learn about SVs, or are you still tinkering and
you're still going to learn? You never finish learning. But we can pretty much...
Do you still wake up in the morning and go to sleep at night thinking of SVs?
At times I do. At times I do. I do have a little trick I do in the workshop where I say to people, you know, pick a bolt up from an SV.
Tell me
I'll close my eyes. Don't let me see it. Give me what it is, and I'll tell you where it fits, what year it's from.
And what success rate do you generate?
100%.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Bloody
hell. 100%.
This bike has taken off your life, sir, has it?
It has, somewhat. Yeah. It has.
Now, come away from the racetrack. What about the man in the street? As you said earlier, it's sold in massive quantities, this bike, and justifiably so.
Yeah, they must have sold hundreds of thousands of them worldwide.
Yeah.
They must have done.
What's the sort of highest mileage example that you've ever worked on at JHS?
We're seeing 100,000 miles out of a standard.
100,000?
100,000 miles. I've built Mini Twins bikes from Bike Show in 50,000 miles plus.
What, and they've stayed reliable?
And they've stayed reliable. And today I know of one that's done a further 3 seasons racing on that engine. And it started life with over 50,000 miles on it as a race bike.
What's the secret to getting that higher mileage from?
I don't think there is a secret. I think that it comes down to looking after it. Good oil.
Yep.
Just follow what Suzuki spec wise is. Don't be taking an engine that's done 50,000 miles plus and think it's doing it good by putting fully synthetic in it. Don't. Put the standard semi-synthetic oil in and change it regularly. Look after it. Don't over rev it. It'll be fine.
Do you think the SV deserves to be put on the same mantle as GSXRs and Boozer engines? Because from what you've told me, I think it does.
I think it's there already.
All right.
Okay. Honestly, yeah. I think it's there. I think it deserves its place in history.
I mean, you have devoted so much time to this bike, have you not?
It doesn't seem like this length of time has passed.
Hmm.
You know, when we sit on these sofas and talk of 20 years plus with one manufacturer and one model of manufacturer, that's an awful lot of time. We have done other things in between. We have worked with other models within the Suzuki range, but we've always come back to our base core bike is the SV650. That is what I'm known for.
Is this where your heart is?
That's where my heart is.
Right. Above any other Suzuki?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I'd rather work on an SV650 than anything else, truth be known, because we know them intimately, every little bit of them. So when customers come into the workshop and they've been working on their bikes and haven't put them back together properly, they generally get a good finger wagging. And we have to put them right, because that's the way the manufacturer's made it.
This could possibly invite a bit of conceit. I don't think it will necessarily, because you're not that sort of guy. But are you the most knowledgeable and experienced SV650 expert on earth? I think there's an argument for it, isn't there?
Depending which areas, but I'd say if it wasn't me, it would have to be my son.
Right, okay. But it's JHS.
I think I've got the upper hand.
Yeah.
But yeah, pick a bolt, screw, whatever you want from any model year. I'll close my eyes, give it to me, and I'll tell you where it fits.
That's knowledge. That is the definition of full knowledge, intimate knowledge of a motorcycle.
Yes. We've had them apart and we've put them back together.
Many times.
Many, many times.
Okay, I mean, looking into the future, did the new 800s catch your eye in the same way the SV did back in 99?
This is a whole new bike aimed at a different market point. And I think it's going to do very, very well indeed. I think it's got a lot of potential. Certainly the price rise of it, it's hitting a point.
But should we not be surprised if we come back and sit here in 5 years' time to be discussing the race versions of the...
It'd be nice to, wouldn't it? Yeah. It would be very nice to.
Is it fair to describe Suzuki's SV650 as one of the world's most underrated motorcycles ever?
I think it certainly is one of the underestimated motorcycles in the world.
Give me some key reasons why you think that's the case then.
I think cost-wise, it's very good. Good value for money. Ease of workability. It's certainly a very good product overall from Suzuki. And it has the scope for lots of modifications, which customers want to do.
An incredible motorbike.
Yes, it's absolutely brilliant.
Well, I don't think any of us could have imagined there was that much to learn about SV650. So thank you very much, James, and thank you for watching.